Hello, everybody, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us. This is Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. We have a special episode tonight, and it's special because we have a very vexing issue that's really coming to the forefront. I will say to everyone, if we thought the thing that happened like a year or two ago about the government able to turn off internet and close off internet sites was a big deal, this is to me just as big, or if not bigger. Joining me tonight, I have Chris from Think Penguin. How's everything going, Chris? Okay, now real quick question. First off, every single week for I think about a year, I've been telling people to send me emails, and I will give them coupon codes to Think Penguin. And I've tried to convey what I think of Think Penguin. Can you tell everyone what is Think Penguin? Why is Think Penguin, and how is Think Penguin doing what it's doing?
Okay. So Think Penguin is, I'm the CEO of Think Penguin, and what the company does basically is it deals with all the issues that come up with proprietary pieces getting in the way of systems actually working, basically, and different pieces of hardware working. So when your Wi-Fi card works, you have a computer that's working, there's somebody behind making that work. And a lot of times, there's nobody, the companies that are behind the technologies that go into your products don't release the code. So those products can't be properly supported by, the community. The mainline kernel developers, if there's a bug in something that's proprietary, they can't fix it. They might not even be able to provide an updated version of the software. So if the manufacturer decides, hey, we don't want to support it anymore, well, that hardware is no longer going to work the next time you go to upgrade. There's all sorts of other issues also with these proprietary bits. For instance, sometimes you can't properly integrate with the kernel because of the development model. If that's the case, you might lose support for certain features, like, for example, power management might not work right. Sometimes what happens is there's people who go and they reverse engineer certain pieces, even for stuff where we have free software, we have the sources available. And so that's the kind of stuff that we like to get involved in. Nothing in our catalog is dependent on proprietary drivers or proprietary software of any kind. We've gotten the sources released for the biggest thing we've probably got accomplished over the last several years is we got the ATH 9K HTC firmware sources released from Qualcomm Athros. Prior they were the firmware was proprietary, but fortunately, because we got the source code released, there's been some bug fixes and some other improvements that were causing people major problems. They weren't able to use the devices, any devices with these chipsets in them. Now we sell three different USB and Wi-Fi adapters with this chipset, so we're taking advantage of a lot of the work we're doing to bring money in, and then we take those funds and we try and reinvest them back into other similar types of efforts. I know one of the efforts we've been working on is a project called LibreCMC, which is a free software distribution for routers. Most router distributions, basically, they include all sorts of non-free pieces in them, and it causes various types of problems. And basically, with this completely free version called LibreCMC, you can get very up to date, the most up to date releases for all these different components that make up a distribution. And some of the benefits to that are, for example, when we first started shipping the router, it didn't have this, but because of an update, because we're able to use the latest kernel, you can go and download from us a newer version of LibreCMC, and when you install that version, you get the latest kernel. And the latest kernel includes it's called buffer bloat. And basically what this is it's an improvement to the networking stack, which the ultimate result is low latency, very low latency. So that was a pretty important thing. If you want your pages to load fast, you're from going from one website to another. You know, this is big. Now, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute. This is a low-end router. Yeah, this is a low-end router, but it's not, it's actually, this is probably a better router for a lot of people because of this. They're not going to be able to take advantage of, you know, 300 megabit per second, Wi-Fi connection when most people's internet connections are still 3 to 10 megabits a second. Probably some of the faster connections are probably closer to 25 to 100, but, you know, even that's even within, you know, the range of what the router is capable of. So, you know, it's not always necessarily best to go with, the highest end product. Sometimes going with a lower end product that's properly supported, it is the way I like to phrase it, is actually a better bet. And for the majority of users, I would definitely say, you know, something like this is better. It's not to say we won't come out with a higher end router. But it's not necessarily, something that, you know, I would want to try and upsell up to people. Just because there's not any benefits for you know, faster Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
For most people, again, not everybody. There might be some benefits to, there's actually some cool things you can do, and that'll probably be added to LibreCMC. So there might be a reason to upgrade in that, or get a higher end router in that case. There's more flash, so there's more you can do and features you can add. But again, it's probably still something more of a technical user or somebody who wants a particular feature would do.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So that's what Think Penguin is. That's not why I'm here today.
Right.
I guess we should probably start on that.
Well, yeah. I'll say the first thing to the end user: just because you install Linux on your computer and everything works, and maybe the drivers are built into the kernel itself, does not mean they're free. A lot of times, proprietary blobs of binary blobs get put into the kernel to support a lot of hardware. What that essentially means is, you don't know what that driver's doing. You don't know what it's not doing. You don't know when it's doing, what it's doing, why it's doing, how it's doing, or anything. What basically Chris is offering is completely free source-based hardware where that they know all of the drivers they're putting into all their stuff is open source, which means we know what the code is doing. We know when the code is doing, why the code is doing, how the code is doing. And these routers are basically going to be at the forefront of the discussion that we're going to be talking about here. And I'll say, a lot of people know DDWRT, OpenWrt, and all these other types of firmware you can put on a router. Just because you download it for free, just because you put it on a device for free, does not mean it is actually free open sourced. A lot of times they have closed source binary blobs in them as well. With a LibreCMC, honestly, you're not going to get much more of a secure router than using that. Now, the issue we're here is because of a website that was brought to my attention from Dan Washko over at Tilts. Thank you, Dan. You can't see me, but I'm saluting you. You're a good man. And it's about savewifi.org, which I'm not going to lie, Chris. I didn't understand anything about this a couple days ago when you first pinged me. So if you can you tell everyone what this basically is?
It's really complicated and really confusing. Oh. It took a month of different lawyers and technical people, software developers, who worked on some of the, code, for developing, one of the guys is, Adrian and, Lewis and, basically, the ATH9K HTC, so that's the USB-N adapters. They actually looked into some of this as well and contributed to this discussion on trying to figure out exactly what the FCC was trying to do and how these rules would impact devices and everybody basically. So there's a few different rules. Some of the rules have passed already and some rules are just being proposed now. And there's a open comment period for the proposed rules. And, so it basically what the FCC is doing is the end result is they're basically have a set of rules that are will be forcing manufacturers to lock down any device which has a software-defined radio. And basically, all your Wi-Fi devices nowadays, they are software-defined radios in one respect or another. And this was kind of one of the things that was brought up in the discussions about what exactly is a software-defined radio, because it's not something that FCC is actually defining in the rules, so it wasn't complete. It's not totally clear. But ultimately, it sounds like it's basically affecting everything. But even if it doesn't, it really doesn't matter. You're still going to end up with devices that are restricted. Even if you're just talking about, for example, devices nowadays, they're 5 gigahertz. Everything's going to the 5 gigahertz, spectrum, and anything with 5 gigahertz is affected. And if it's a software defined radio, basically what that means is the operating system can control, the parameters of the radio. So the operating system, the user, can make the radio go outside of what it's supposed to do, or what it's what the FCC has okayed it to do. And this isn't—it's a problem. It's potentially a big problem if everybody is going and messing with these settings. You know, that's not a good thing. We don't want that. Nobody wants that. That would be bad for everybody. The problem is what they're requiring manufacturers to do, and that's the locking down part. There's ways to go about reducing the negative impact that this would have without actually locking everything down. And this is still an open discussion as far as what the best course of action is to take and how to take it. But locking down is certainly not the best course of action. So the rules basically, they don't say that manufacturers have to lock devices down. I have to be careful here. I don't believe it actually says that specifically. What it says is something to the effect, it's something to the effect that, so the FCC has basically explicitly come out in their questions to manufacturers that the manufacturers have to answer, and they know, because of the way everything is designed nowadays, they know the only way to basically solve the problem and comply with the rules is for the manufacturer to lock the devices down. So the question that the FCC asks to the manufacturer for certification, in order to get certified, and you can't sell an uncertified device, at least not generally speaking, is how do you plan to lock down or stop DDWRT from being flashed on the router? So there's not really any question what is going on. I mean, it's very clear in my mind anyway, and a lot of people's mind, that this is a very dangerous set of rules. Now there are some valid issues here as far as valid concerns. There were some problems with Doppler weather radar at airports, right, around airports. So there's certainly something that needs to be done, but it's definitely not locking down every device, that's out there. And there's also potentially ways to, maybe lock parameters down. But what we need to do what we need to know for sure is exactly what is the goal of the FCC. The FCC hasn't actually come out and said, we're doing this because of that. There's been some people quoted in articles, something to the effect of that's what the FCC, the reason the FCC is doing it, but that's speculation. I've not been able to get anybody, nobody that's part of this campaign has ever been able to get anybody from the FCC, to explicitly say that. We've seen quotes, I've seen quotes from people from the FCC who have, they kind of do double talk and, you know, to work around actually saying that you have to lock down the radios. They basically say something to the effect of we just want the parameters locked, but the end result is they have to lock down the device because that's the only way to really do it. There might be some other ways to do it, but again, we still need to know exactly. The rules have to be defined very carefully, and they need to be changed. I mean, they can't be the way they are. The rules need to be changed in order to do it. If it's going to be done, it's got to be done, and the rules have to be such that it can be done in a different way other than locking it down.
Yeah. I'll say that to me, this is a lot worse than SOPA, because what I don't think people understand is this could affect every single thing sold in any store with Wi-Fi on it, because this is like a trifecta of bad things going on. First and foremost, all Wi-Fi chips are apparently now software-defined radios because the prices came so far down for them to put in hard-locked Wi-Fi chips that only do on one set of spectrum cost more than putting in this software-defined radio. Two, they're pulling out a nuclear bomb to kill a fly on the wall. This is a very small issue that's only happened, from what I can tell, a couple times in a couple key isolated parts, and to me, they're unbelievably overreacting. But three, they have these proposals so vaguely written that I seriously don't think I don't think the people writing it actually understood what it was that they're trying to do, which is why everyone's having a hard time understanding this. When the government is vague, that's when we, as the people, I think, got to be very careful about what they do. We can't write them like a blank check to just, quote unquote, take care of this issue, because it will mean all Wi-Fi, basically, chips will be locked down. I don't want to say like UEFI, but you're going to have blocks where you're going to be able to download DDWRT or another firmware, and you even might be able to install it. After that boots, it either ain't going to fully boot or the wireless isn't going to work because of these disables that they feel like they have to do. I cannot encourage people enough. SaveWiFi.org. Go there, read it. It's not long. I don't read a lot. It's not long. Read it. And then bottom line is we have to take action. SOPA was something we all jumped around and like chickens with their heads cut off. I think this is just as, if not more, important. This is going to affect a lot of hardware.
Yeah, it is. We're already actually seeing, like I said, some of these rules are actually already in effect. So we're actually seeing devices, routers, come with locks on them, and this was code that was added to routers that were already being manufactured and distributed. So this isn't like. You know, it's not a question of, oh, well, the FCC, you know, they have good intents and this isn't going to do what you think it's going to do. No, it is. It's already having the effect. It's already having the negative impact. We need to get them to, to get them to change the proposed rules. And then we're going to need to go back and get them to overturn, which is going to be a much bigger task than trying to get the proposed rules overturned or changed, I should say, because they're not actually final. So you don't need to get them overturned, but so it's definitely a big concern. So what's interesting actually is when he said before you might be able to flash it, you won't. What the way it's currently being done, and the rules allow it, basically, at least it appears to be the case, manufacturers can put in like what's called like a software lock, basically, and it basically just won't allow you to upload the firmware from the user interface if it's not signed. So it basically means that only the manufacturer, you can only use the firmware the manufacturer is distributing. You can't go download LibreCMC, you can't go download OpenWRT, you can't go download DDWRT, you can't download anything basically, other than what's the firmware has, you know, what the firmware the manufacturer has released to you. And in most cases, they don't usually release too many updates, and if they do, it's not for very long and all that. So it's a security concern, a bit, kind of a big security concern as well. Now, you may be able to get around some of these problems with you can get about $100 worth of equipment, and you can specialize equipment and, you know, work around it. That's basically what you were just talking about 2 seconds ago. but it's not something that is, you know, easy to do. You definitely have to have more, you know, more technical skill in order to do it. It's not necessarily something you can even really do with all routers. So basically the way that works is you, and I'm not encouraging people to do this, but you would actually be breaking the law or breaking the rules anyway. But what's going on is you'd have to take a clip, attach it directly to the flash chip on these routers.
Boy.
And flash it that way. And what would happen? So right now, with the software locks, you can actually still get around it, and anybody who wants to get around it is going to be able to do so this way. So the FCC's regulations right now really aren't actually stopping anybody but legitimate users from using you know, the firmware that they want. And the firmware that you have to understand also that you can't, you know, as a user, you can't accidentally violate the restrictions, the restrictions that are good that have been in place for you know, I don't even know how long, but I'm always in place, I guess, pretty much. At least in, you know, in the last 25 years. And I believe it goes back to like the 1930s or something. Because you do need regulation, you do need rules. Let me put it that way. As far as, you know, who can use what spectrum. Otherwise, you know, nothing's gonna work.
Right.
You're gonna have people chatting over each other. You know, like for example, radio stations. This is kind of a good example. Sometimes you might hear, you might be listening to one radio station, but you also hear a little bit of another radio station. Well, if we didn't have these rules, you wouldn't be able to understand what's going on, what's being said, because everybody would be talking over each other. So you know that's not in dispute. You know, we don't want the airwaves to become unusable. What we want is the FCC to implement sane rules and not make it so that downstream users who are following, you know, and they're not abusing, you know, their access and use of the airwaves from being able to swap out the software. In order to actually break these rules and the people who are doing it, that we believe is probably the reason the FCC, again, we believe because the FCC hasn't actually come out and said it, not anywhere I've ever seen. And if they have, I would like to see this because, you know, we've had people from other organizations say, you know, the FCC has said such and such, or no. Or something to that effect anyway. But this isn't the case. It's been speculation. So yeah, it's a big deal. And we need people to go to www.savewifi.org and basically send comments into the FCC telling them you know, how are you going to be affected? If you have any, you know, kind of data, you know, like if you have a business that sells routers or computers or, you know, any kind of electronic device, you know, tell them that you're going to be affected. One of the important things is that the FCC has basically come out and they haven't really followed their own rules. They're supposed to evaluate the impact on the market from any rule changes, and they have either, my understanding is basically that they've basically kind of said, oh, this isn't going to have any, you know, this is going to have not any real impact. Which is obviously, you know, with the billions of devices all based on the Linux kernel and free software, saying it's not going to have any impact is just like, I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, this is just the most hilarious statement imaginable. Every single device that ships just about is going to be affected because everything is running free software. And if the community isn't able to make feature improvements, fix bugs, and so on, then the manufacturers aren't going to get those bug fixes. And if the manufacturers aren't going to get those bug fixes, it's going to have a major effect on security. And, you know, not to mention, you know, waste. I mean, think about this. If a manufacturer has a router out for a couple of years and you buy a router and or it doesn't really have to be a router, it could be any device, and you can't upgrade it because the manufacturer, and this is how it is. This is the real world here. The manufacturer doesn't provide, you know, generally, again, they don't provide updates, or many updates. You're going to end up with a huge amount of waste, electronic waste. And this is something I was never even thinking about in regards to this issue. But think about if you have to replace a router as opposed to, you know, being able to just upgrade your firmware. That's a huge amount of waste if you want to try to even, you know, if you even want to begin to try and secure, you know, have a somewhat secure network. That's the only way you're really going to be able to do it if these rules pass. So, you know, it's very, very important that we get these rules, these proposed rules, changed, and, the rules that are already in effect thrown out. Go to, www.savewifi.org, tell the FCC how you're, gonna be, impacted, whether, you know, whether you use, OpenWRT or LibreCMC or DDWRT, you know, tell them that, tell them, you know, what you use it for. Tell them how you're gonna be negatively impacted. You know, there's a bunch of other issues as well, we can talk about actually. So some of the reasons people, you know, some people like to upgrade their routers, to other firmwares, because of security, but that's not the only reason. That's just one of the many reasons. And again, it's not just routers. I want to emphasize this. It's going to impact any device with an SoC chip in it. So, like, for example, it probably would affect Chromebooks and other types of similar devices as well, as a good example. Because they're using similar, SoCs and so on. Alright, let me see here. Okay, so one of the things that's added to some firmwares is the ability to adjust. Well, no, wait a minute, hold on, I have to be careful. No, let me rephrase this. So the FCC, right now, if you get a stock router, the rules that you have to abide by are not the same rules that everybody else has to abide by. Amateur radio operators are allowed to change power settings because they know how to change it without causing problems. And they, one of the reasons that they would do this is in an emergency. Think Katrina. When Katrina happened, there were amateur radio operators who helped with rescue efforts, and the way they communicated was through using a modified version of, I believe it was OpenWRT, but anyway, they used a modified version of free software firmware, and by doing that, they were able to help with rescue efforts. This is one of the things that would be much, much more difficult if we didn't have these cheap routers that could be used. The firmware could be replaced. If they were all locked down, they couldn't do this. You know, and I don't know if they'd be able to do it with, more expensive, you know, imported devices. That might be possible. But it would end up being much more expensive from what I've been told, by amateur radio operators. Let's see here. So we've talked about how it'll affect routers, but like I said, right now it's not totally clear. There's a number of different issues that surround this. As I was saying, it could actually prevent you from installing another version, another distribution, or if you have Windows, if your system came with Windows, you might not be able to install another operating system. Because it depends on how the system is designed. But if the system is designed with an SoC and it's got a software-defined radio, which it probably will, the only way to lock it down is to lock the operating system down, to ensure that the user can't swap that operating system for another operating system. So it's not just a router. How would you like it if tomorrow, you know, you couldn't get a computer that you could run your favorite distribution on? Because that's where this is going. And you might be thinking, well, I'll just hack around it. Well, yeah, you can hack around it today, but what happens when the rules change again? Because again, this isn't going to work what the FCC is proposing. You can get around it. You probably will be able to get around it in a lot of cases with, $100 of equipment. So it's not going to really stop the problem. People still are going to be able to abuse the spectrum. And even if they were successful in doing this and it did stop the abuse with routers, it doesn't actually stop the abuse of the spectrum. There's other ways to abuse the spectrum. This is just one of those ways. So it is a big issue. There's also other groups that will also be negatively impacted. Particularly innovation will be negatively impacted. Right now, there's mesh networking groups that are using they're using cheap consumer routers to develop and test mesh networking. And mesh networking is basically I guess you'd describe it as a decentralized means of communication. So instead of having to connect to the internet, you can connect to other users. And those users will connect to other users, and eventually, when you send a message, it'll eventually hopefully get to your final destination. And you don't actually need to connect to the internet. So these are some of the other examples of problems that are going to be introduced. It's going to stop this type of innovation, and it's not the industry that's doing the innovation. It's hackers. It's people outside. They might work, in the industry, but it's not the stuff they're doing in the industry. It's the stuff they're doing for fun. It's the stuff they're doing outside, on their own time to make these improvements. So it's very important that they have access, these people have access to the full and complete set of source code, and they're not prevented from flashing their own image. There's another issue, actually, that's been brought up, and it's an interesting one. So the way these rules are, it basically, in order to comply with FCC rules, any manufacturer who's using certain licenses, certain free software licenses, would not be able to use that code anymore. Mm. Because the license requires prohibits TiVoization. So, and basically what TiVoization is it means that you're using some sort of lock to prevent a user from being able to build their own version and install it, or for that matter, install any other version. So that's another issue that needs to be brought up. The reason for this, in newer free software licenses, it has to do with the fact that TiVo, the company, you guys might remember this, but basically TiVo was a company that, designed a digital video recorder, and they built their systems off of, GNU Linux, and in the process, I don't actually remember the entire details. I don't remember if they released the source code. I think they actually did release a lot of source code because they were required to by the license. So they complied with the license technically, but they didn't comply with the ethics of it, right, or the sentiment of the license.
The spirit and, of it.
Yeah, the spirit of the license. And they basically prevented users from installing any other version other than the one that they released.
Yeah, they had a very tricky way of releasing all the source code after being threatened, after being told you're breaking the law, release the source code. They said, okay, well, here's the source code, but there was a hook in the it was either in the compiling or in the distribution to where you could compile, but you couldn't install because there was a missing piece that could not be done unless it was by the company themselves. So they were following the letter of the law, but they were clearly violating the spirit of the law. So,
yeah,
it's bad. And I'll say the type of laptops that are affected from this are basically any laptop with integrated Wi-Fi. When there's not a daughter board on that laptop, this laptop could be affected to lockdowns to where you can't install anything except for the okayed OSs, which of course will be not what we want. And the thing is, even if you don't run Linux, if you try to install a Hackintosh or something, it still ain't going to work. This, I think, and now here's where I'm literally scared of this, Chris. It's so vaguely written. I think it is one of those, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think whoever first thought of this thought of it as a good intention, but it's really bad because I buy a lot of single board computers, Banana Pi, Raspberry Pi, Orange Pi, all these little small micro computers that I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to buy from overseas and have them imported into the U.S. because they're going to be violating the law.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because so right now the law, the rules that are in effect currently and the proposed rules that are going into effect are actually also going to, there's going to be a version of them also passed in Canada. Or they're going to be, I guess I shouldn't say are going to be, they haven't actually been passed yet, but are likely going to, they're following suit. Let's put it that way. So both in Canada and Europe. So this is not just going to affect you if you're in the United States. If you're listening from overseas, this is something that affects you too. So, you know, send your comments in www.savewifi.org. Tell them how you're going to be infected. Tell them, you know, what you use your system for, you know, or what any of your devices. Tell them that, you know, you don't want to be restricted. You know, you don't want to be restricted on what you can do with your own hardware. There's certainly, I'm sure there's lots and lots and lots of other scenarios that people that, you know, they want or reasons that they want access and they need access to the sources and the ability to swap out the software. Let's try and think some of these other good examples. So if you're, I realize most of you are probably technical people, so you can probably come up with your own good reasons, but let's talk about some of the others. You know, you get a router and it probably doesn't have, you know, a lot of these routers, they don't actually have like VPN support. This is a very good one. So a lot of people will flash the routers with VPN, or maybe they'll buy a router with VPN. So maybe you're not technical. This isn't just going to affect technical people. This is going to affect everybody. There's a huge market for routers with, you know, free software, firmware, and that has VPN support. And, you know, this is a security feature, privacy feature, and it's becoming much, much more popular, and it's growing. The demand is growing. It's a significant demand, and it's not just in the United States. It's particularly overseas, and there's certain entities that are causing the pushing of this because they're basically... they're violating what I would consider people's rights. Well, let's not go into that topic of conversation. Let's stick to the FCC, rules here. All right. So, some other good examples of how this will impact, you know, this is actually something that's going to impact companies, not just end users. So there's a lot of companies that will reflash routers and provide free access, internet access, using these routers. They won't be able to do that. this isn't stock firmware. This isn't stuff that's coming with stock firmware from the manufacturers. This is stuff that's being added. These routers are being reflashed and they're being used to provide, you know, either pay internet access or free internet access. And they won't be able to do that if these restrictions go into effect.
I'll say there are plenty of coffee shops I know where their techs have went in, flashed the firmware on a router so they could offer gateways to the customers that are secure. They do it at doctor's office, dentist office, vet clinics, everywhere, all kinds of places. This is literally going to change, I think, how Wi-Fi is distributed to a lot of different places.
Yeah, I actually have a good, a really good example of a small, I don't even know if I call him a small business owner, just a guy who, you know, was looking to make a few dollars, and, you know, he provided a service at an event that we've been attending for the last couple of years, as well, me and as part with Think Penguin. And the event is called the event is called Porkfest. And basically, what this guy was doing was this past year, he set up a wireless access point to provide internet access at this event. It's been an issue for a long time, and you know, he thought, hey, you know what, I'm gonna provide a service that's better. Actually, there was some internet access already available in prior years, but it wasn't safe, it wasn't secure. It was actually sending, I believe it was sending traffic to some really kind of fishy, they were doing something, I forget the details of it, unfortunately, but they were doing some really fishy stuff with the traffic. And what this guy wanted to do was he wanted to provide people with a way to connect, basically, using, very sophisticated encryption. And when I say sophisticated, what I mean is it wasn't just your normal WPA2 stuff. The way it worked is every user got their own key, and it was really, really neat. He provided instructions. He made it easy to use, you know, regardless what operating system, whether it was a phone or it was a computer, you know, he made it easy to use, and he made a little bit of money doing it. He wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for OpenWRT. His solution was built off of OpenWRT. You know, he only provided Wi-Fi to part of the campground at this event. But he could have extended that further out. So, you know, with mesh networking technology, he could have extended that farther out potentially. But if we're not able to improve mesh networking, he's not going to be able to do that. So, you know, there's all these things that could potentially be done. Oh, it was actually interesting. Another interesting little tidbit about this, what happened was there was some manufacturer who did have some really high-end hardware that did have something, I'm trying to think what it was exactly. Well, ultimately, what it boiled down to was the high-end hardware, the really expensive routing stuff, was worse than the OpenWRT that he was using to provide internet access. While everybody else's connections were going slow, who were using this other access point, you know, it was really high-end hardware, his was going, you know, great, nice and fast. So basically, everybody was hopping onto this Wi-Fi access point that was using this freer firmware. The stuff that was actually coming from the manufacturers that were supposed to be providing the high-end stuff, it wasn't working. It wasn't not in any sane way. It was just going unbelievably slow. So this is another great example. And you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is when they go and they use their router firmware, and you know, it says Netgear or it says Linksys or you know whatever it says, a lot of times all this is basically a front end to older versions of the same or similar software that's being innovated on by the free software community. Somebody will get something into OpenWRT, and maybe a few years from now it'll end up in, you know, it'll be end up some, you know, botched version of it will end up, you know, running on your Netgear router that comes from the store. So, you know, it's not a lot of this software you actually already have. So even end users will be negatively impacted from the lack of, improvements from the community. A lot of the manufacturers don't really know what they're doing. And the fastest route to, get something that sort of somewhat works, or resembling something that works, that's what they do. And when it, once it works, you know, it seems to work for, you know, a small, you know, or a percentage of the customer base, that's it. They stop. They don't continue to improve it. They don't fix bugs. You know, unless it's like they get, you know, some bad, really bad PR, there's not an update. And the only way to update it is to install third-party firmware.
Yeah. Most of the time I reflashed my router starting, 10 years ago, it really wasn't because I thought of security or free software. It was performance. It was strictly performance. And still to this day, even no matter what router I buy, when I flash the firmware on it, I'm getting much better performance by that. And companies' jobs are not to make the best product. The company's job is not to make the most efficient product. Their job is to get a product out the door as soon as possible so that they can make money right now. So it's always just something that's good enough. What I'm really shocked is I haven't seen makers or hacker spaces completely freaking out about this. And my logic is it's that they don't know. I cannot encourage people enough.
There's been a lot of misinformation going around. People think that this is not an issue because of what other people have been quoted as saying, who weren't involved in analyzing and understanding the rules. And they've basically been quoted as saying stuff that they didn't fully understand as if it was fact when it wasn't. So there's actually been, this debate going on about, does this affect us or doesn't it affect us? It does affect you. That's what I want to point out. I just want to point out some of the groups who have actually, analyzed, or at least some of the people in some of these groups. People, ex Qualcomm employees have looked at these rules, and understand the source code even because they wrote it. not everybody at Qualcomm is necessarily going to be a good person to, inquire with about, getting a quote. But this is what's gone on. They've gotten quotes from people who did not, look through the rules. They maybe read an article or something, and they didn't understand what the article said. And then they conclude, oh, well, this isn't an issue. Well, no, it is an issue. Another group that's involved is the Free Software Foundation. And I should point out, this isn't actually a Free Software Foundation, project. This is a coordinated effort by a number of different organizations and entities. One of them is the Purple Foundation. One of them is people from OpenWRT, people from LibreCMC. There's some people from, I believe there's actually some, there is one person from Qualcomm, who's actually working there still at the moment. I'm trying to think who else is involved. There's the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They're going to be coming out with a statement on their blog here shortly. If they haven't already done so, there's a bunch of other people. Oh, there's, I believe, the Free Software, the Freedom Software Law Center, I believe the Free Software Conservancy as well. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of different people. There's a bunch of different lawyers. There's a bunch of, there's people who have worked on these issues before, in regards to, the FCC rules that have been passed prior. One of the people, worked on some of these rules like a year ago, actually. So this is not, there's not a question of, do we know what we're talking about? We know what we're talking about. I might get stuff, I could get something wrong, talking to you. I'm not the person, who is, knowledgeable about the, I've been following along, what the lawyers are saying and what the technical, the engineers have been saying and the software developers. And, I've been following along with it, but I'm not the person who is intimately familiar with any of it. I am familiar to the extent that I understand how it's going to impact us, assuming, the rules are, implemented. Well, I mean, I can already, tell you how they're it's going to be impacting us because, it's already happening. We already have routers that are locked down. So this is not something, that they just decided to do. It turns out it's something that it already has to do with rules that are passed and being proposed is why it's going on. These firmwares, it wasn't just one company doing it. There's multiple companies doing it. And these rules need to be opposed. So let's repeat the URL, www.savewifi.org. Go to the URL and send your comments into the FCC. Tell them that, tell them how you're going to be impacted. Tell them what you use your, you know, you use your devices for. Tell them, you know, do you have a Android phone and you install some other, you know, firmware on it? Because, you know, that, that might be, another good example of a device that's going to be impacted. There's a lot of people who install Replicant, on certain phones. Trying to think some of the other, firmwares for phones.
CyanogenMod, MyUI, OxygenOS. I mean, there's a whole bunch of OSs more stable than the stock default on Android devices.
Absolutely. And, there's a lot of great features that some of these other devices have. If you want to install something that's not approved by the manufacturer, essentially, for example, if you want to get break out of, you know, the Android store or, you know, Amazon's store or, I mean, iPhones are probably a poor example, but if you want to break outside, you want to break outside of those stores, that they've constrained you to and install software, that may not be in the manufacturer's interest, you need to have access to the hardware and the software and be able to flash these devices and install a different operating system. This is a major threat. It's not just going to affect people in the United States. Even if this was just rules that were being passed in the United States, they're going to affect people everywhere, because manufacturers, you have to understand how manufacturing works. You know, there'll be one company that maybe designs, you know, a core component, and then another company will design a board, they'll produce a reference design, and then there will be, you know, dozens of other companies that, you know, build a product off that reference design. If they're designing in, you know, locks and so on, it's not just going to end up in a product that ships in the United States. It's going to end up in a product that ships worldwide. And there's financial incentives for companies to lock devices down already. We already have locks all over the place. We don't need the software, the defaults, designs to come with locks. It's just going to end up where we don't have control of anything anymore. Because manufacturers are just gonna be like, oh, hey, I might as well do this. I don't want people having to be able to upgrade their own, you know, their own device. I want them to buy a new device. I mean, we've already got that, but, it's gonna be even worse. It's gonna be, you're not gonna be able to, you know, root your phone anymore.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say that's why I'm so uppity on this. A lot of people are saying that the thing that's going on with farm trackers right now is bad. And it is. Don't get me wrong. It is horrendous and it is bad. This, to me, has much deeper of an impact to normal people, direct impact. I don't encourage people to do this a lot, but I am dead serious when I tell people this. You need to go into places like XDA forums and spam them about this. You know, you need to go to work. You need to tell people about this. You need to go on Twitter. You need to tweet about it. You need to go on Google Plus. You need to Google Plus about this. You need to go on any social media platform you're on, Facebook or anything else, and you need to make sure as many people know this as possible, because there's one truth about society. 6 degrees of separation is real. And the more people we let know, there's a chance we're going to accidentally or purposely let somebody important with a lot of pull and a lot of stroke catch wind of this. This needs to catch on. This needs to hit mass. This needs to go viral. People need to know about this. Spam everybody you have. And I'm sorry, I've never told people before to spam people about anything else. This, to me, is that damn dangerous.
Yeah, it's extremely dangerous. What we're actually doing, what the FCC is actually doing, is it's putting control of devices into a very small number of manufacturers' hands. And if you need the end of the world scenario, what that could potentially do is enable the government to put in back doors and do all sorts of other stuff, and we won't have any way to get around it. This is the easiest way to control everything. Every kind of communication device you have, this is it. Yeah. This is it. The first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna get them. You're gonna pass some rules. You're gonna pass some legislation that, oh yeah, well, it's for the good of the people. It's good. It's for the good of the airways. And then they're gonna slip stuff in, and you're not gonna know about it because, well, it's now it's all proprietary. You can't change it. this is how it begins. This is where it begins. And we've already, you know, unfortunately, we've already got that. It's already going on. And that's without the roles. I'll bring up some, unrelated, examples of how this is bad. All modern Intel, chips that have come out for a little while now have had, firmware, let's see, I might screw this up here. Active Management Engine firmware, is the piece I'm thinking of. And basically, this firmware, we don't know what it does. The firmware is proprietary and it's on all modern Intel systems. Now, so the manufacturer, or I shouldn't even say the manufacturer, Intel has told us what it does. But we don't know what it does, really, because we don't have access to the source code. We can't flash another BIOS or another piece to replace this. We're basically just trusting Intel. And Intel isn't everything. Intel is in all of our computers. And AMD also has similar technology that they're implementing. We're already at a point where we don't have control. We don't know what's going on with our machines. Even when we've installed, you know, the free operating system, you could be running Driscoll, completely 100% free distribution, and you're still running proprietary little bits of proprietary code. And we don't know what they're doing. We do know that it enables remote access to the machine. And we do know that it, Intel actually explicitly, advertises this as a feature. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what bugs are in it, you know? And it's actually kind of funny because there's actually some really good examples of why this is so horrible and why it's so horrible to not know or not have access to the source code. One of the things there's a distribution for a phone called Replicant, and Replicants, they only release basically Android, but without any of the non-free pieces. And one of the pieces that was included in every phone running Android was spyware. And that spyware was reporting back to manufacturers all sorts of activity about what users were doing on their phone. Now, if that's not scary, I don't know what is. The only phones that this wasn't going on with was the phones where people had replaced their stock Android firmware with this distribution called Replicant. And the only reason that the spyware wasn't included was because it happened to be a proprietary piece that we didn't know what was going on with it. They didn't know when they removed it that it was spyware. They just knew that they didn't know what was going on with it. They didn't have the source code. It was a bad piece. And the same thing is potentially going on elsewhere with things like the active management firmware, for the Intel CPUs, which is in every modern Intel, any modern Intel systems have this. So, you know, there's already backdoors, you know, whether or not there's bugs, you know, that people are exploiting to actually, you know, remotely connect to your machine. I don't know. Does the government have a backdoor? Again, I don't know. We don't know. Nobody knows because we don't have access to the source code. We can't even disable this piece because if we disable it, the system doesn't boot. And this goes back to the digital restrictions, and the locks and all, that are being implemented, and are going to be required by the FCC. Intel, the way that Intel locks work is it's more at a hardware level. So we can actually flash, and this is something that's actually very scary because the technology is actually designed to work not just with Intel CPUs, but it's actually designed to work, with other companies' products and architectures and so forth. And basically, so this hardware, what this hardware lock does is it checks the firmware. And if the firmware is not signed by Intel, you can't load it. We can flash the firmware. We can flash this Active Management Engine firmware in Intel systems, but if we do, the system won't boot.
Yeah. And I'll say, this is why I laugh at people who talk about the quote-unquote black phone, which is now on the market over in Europe. They say it's the most secure phone ever made. But they have proprietary blobs of drivers they have to load because the GPU, the Wi-Fi, and the LTE is not open sourced, which means there's at least three sets of drivers that are proprietary blobs that no one knows what they're doing. So I literally laugh at people when they say that's a secure phone. There is no such thing as a modern phone that you can call 100% secure because of these binary blobs for hardware.
Yeah. Every device is a tracking device. Let me rephrase this. Every cell phone is a tracking device. A cell phone wouldn't work if it wasn't. And one of the components is the modem, whether it's a CDMA modem or a GSM modem, it doesn't really matter. But basically, these components have proprietary firmware. It's running on a separate chip. And it's designed to be separate so that I guess basically so this is actually interesting. So this kind of goes back to one of the things that, you know, people are saying, oh, it's not going to affect us, and it will. But they have this idea that everything is on, you know, a separate chip, and, you know, they're, you know, these things are just, oh, they'll just add features to the chip or whatever, and you know, we'll be able to continue to load whatever operating systems we want and firmwares we want and so forth. But these, with these software-defined radios, that's not what's going on. In a cell phone, you got the GSM firmware on a separate chip, or the CDMA firmware, I suppose, for the modem. And you don't need that firmware, the sources for that firmware, in order to flash the phone, because it's running on a separate chip. But with the Wi-Fi, that Wi-Fi is probably not. It's built into the SoC. If you want to lock it down, you're probably going to need to lock the whole phone down. And it's the same thing with routers and laptops and so on. I actually am not even 100% sure that, I'm actually kind of curious as to what'll happen. Well, I guess in order to get the laptop, like a laptop certified, I'm not even sure, like, if there's a separate chip, I think there's an issue because there's still software defined radios. So a manufacturer might even be forced to, even if it is a separate chip, they might be forced to lock down, a laptop and similar types of devices. I mean, again, this whole thing is there's a lot of questions that, you know, need to be answered, and there's a lot of double talk and stuff that's making it sound like, oh, it won't be a big deal. Well, it is a big deal. It's already having an impact. The manufacturers are already implementing these locks, and they're already making it much, much more difficult for end users to replace the firmwares. I'm going to give out the website again. It's www.savewifi.org. Visit the site, send your comments into the FCC, tell them why, tell them how this is going to negatively impact you. The FCC has basically written it off as saying it's not going to impact anybody when this is just not the case. We're already seeing, problems, from rules that have passed and, or are being proposed. It's going to have a major negative impact across the board for every type of device imaginable. It might not have had an effect, 10 years ago, Wi-Fi, maybe it wouldn't have had an effect. And maybe not even, even if it doesn't have an effect, today, it already is, but even if that hadn't have been the case, it's going to have an effect tomorrow, because the way things are going, the way manufacturers, they have a financial incentive to cut costs. If a manufacturer doesn't do that, their product won't be competitive on the market, which means they're going to go out of business if they don't put these locks on. They have to do that. We need to get these rules overturned. Yes, there may be ways to solve some of these problems if the FCC says, yeah, we're going to cooperate and we're going to find an alternative solution. Yeah, there may be a way, but we need to get the FCC to recognize first that there is a major problem. Exactly. This isn't something they can just write off. It's actually something to go back to. So one of the things, the FCC didn't have these rules prior, and when they didn't have these rules, the reason that this wasn't a problem, and it really isn't a problem, is because none of the major firmwares that you can get actually make it possible. They do not enable end users' ability. They don't have the features in the firmwares to begin with that will allow you to operate these devices outside of the parameters that the device was certified for to begin with. So it's not even a real issue, you know, as far as end users are concerned. What this is it's an issue that is being, the whole issue is been caused by people who are very technical, and they're going out of their way to violate the rules that are already in place. And this is just a cheap way to solve that problem. It's an overreaction. It's unnecessary. The FCC is already in a position to fine end users. If you violate the rules, okay, you can be fined up to $20,000 per violation. The FCC can go after the people who are doing this. They may be doing that already. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But that's a solution to the problem. That's one solution. There's also other ways to go about solving this problem. If there was an issue where a distributor of firmware was doing that, we could solve this problem by other means. All of the major firmwares, everybody who's involved in this Wi-Fi space is pretty much already in agreement that this is bad and this shouldn't be done, and they're already willing to agree to sign a promise, basically, that they will not add a user interface feature to their firmwares that would make it possible for end users to operate the device outside of the parameters. We already know that the people in the community, the OpenWRT community, LibreCMC, and other developers working in the Wi-Fi space, the mainline kernel developers, all these people, we already know that they're willing to, say, we're not going to do this, because they've already basically come out and they've already got policies on this. So it's not a serious issue. It's been overblown. And we need to get the FCC to realize it's going to have a major negative impact. We can't let them write it off. They've already kind of written it off, as it's not going to affect anybody. My understanding is, one of the people involved basically said something to the effect of, the FCC does not, they were required to do an impact study for any proposed rules, and their response, which I believe was a published response, was something to the effect it's not going to have any impact, or it's not going to have much of an impact, which is obviously not the case. So I'm going to give out the website again. It's www.savewifi.org. Go there, submit your comments to the FCC, tell them, that you do not want your devices to be locked down. You want access, you want full access to your devices, and they need to come up with another solution to this problem. The community is certainly prepared to work with them. There's some other actually interesting tidbits. One of the largest hardware manufacturers has actually been it's actually been reported. I can't tell you who at this point is. It's not actually public knowledge. But one of the largest hardware manufacturers, router hardware manufacturers, has actually come out saying something to the effect of they didn't even realize the problem existed, basically. They haven't said anything publicly, but there, it's an issue that they're looking into now and they're investigating, because it is a problem for them, and they actually are concerned about this issue. And, you know, we all need to be concerned about this issue. So we need to keep focused. www.savewifi.org. Send your comments in. Tell FCC that you think this is a bad idea. There's instructions on the website as to exactly how to go about doing this. www.savewifi.org is not the site where you're going to comment. The site you're going to comment is a site from the FCC. There's also some other information people should know. There's been the FCC this week, or this past week, I should say, at this point, had their website was down for filing comments because they're moving systems, their major infrastructure overhaul, from my understanding, and so their website's been down. Which has actually created a lot of confusion as far as to when the deadline is, how much time you actually have to file a comment. It has been reported by many different news outlets already that the deadline, I believe the deadline they were reporting was September 7th, which is already passed now. This is not correct. The deadline was all automatically extended, I believe until September 9th, for all rules, I guess, that were under proposed rules, I guess, that they're going on right now. So I guess there's different rules that are being proposed, and this is one set of rules, and it doesn't matter which set of rules, they were all extended if they were going to end during this week, this past week. They were extended until September 9th, as a result. But that is actually been extended further. So it's actually now October 9th that you have until to file comments with the FCC. So if you're not able to file, you should file a comment right now. You shouldn't wait. If you wait, chances are you're not going to file. Chances are you're going to forget. So I definitely encourage everybody to file a comment today, if you can. And if not today, do it tomorrow. Do it as soon as you can. You know, write a good comment. You know, there's some suggestions on, different areas that might affect you on the website. Against www.savewifi.org. Now, the October 9th deadline is actually just the first, it's the second extension, but there's actually another comment period. So there's another comment period that is October 9th. I'm trying to think when their response. There's also a response comment period, and I'm not actually seeing that on the Save Wi-Fi Wiki currently, and I don't remember off the top of my head what it was. But there's another period as well after this comment period, so you will be able to go back and look and see what other people have to say, and if you want to respond to those comments and counter anybody's, so you have to understand that comments might actually come from other companies who are in favor of this. This is another thing to remember. So the overall rules are actually probably the manufacturers are actually probably in favor of the overall rules. So there may be companies that say things and people within companies that are being quoted that don't want you to believe that this is going to have an impact on you, even though it will, because they have an incentive to get these rules passed. Sometimes you need to think about what people are saying, who is saying them, and whether or not you can rely on those people, what they're saying. Not everybody has our interests, the community's interests at heart here. I don't know everybody who comments is going to have, an issue with the rules. There could be comments, that say exactly the opposite. You know, we need to pass these rules, it's not going to be an issue, or, I don't know. So definitely, when the comment period opens, the second comment period, you might want to take a look and see. You can already go and see what other people have said. I don't believe you can respond to any of those comments yet, because it's not like the response comment period. www.savewifi.org. Again, this is, I should probably talk about what exactly is going on here. The FCC is basically planning to ban, free software. They're proposing rules, which are going to institute locks on devices. And these locks will prevent you from installing, firmware, and operating systems that are not approved, or not, signed by the manufacturer. And we already know that manufacturers are really, really poor about providing updates, updated firmware, and they're definitely not going to provide, other, third-party firmwares. You just know that's not going to happen. The companies that actually are advertising, like, even the ones that are already advertising, there's a few out there, actually, or at least one or, yeah, there's a few, that actually advertise, like DDWRT and OpenWRT and some of these other third-party firmwares, but they're not providing these firmwares on the routers. Once these locks go into place, that's it. You're not going to be able to install those firmwares. The manufacturers kind of take a back step, they'll advertise it, but they're not going to support it. And if the locks go into place, you won't, I would assume they're not going to be able to advertise it anymore because you won't be able to install a third party firmware at all. So some of the information these comments are public. When you post them, other people are going to be able to read the comments. It is advisable to try and write something that, others can understand. If you have any information on how it's going to impact you, that would be great to submit. The better the comment, the more likely it's going to be considered by the FCC. This isn't a matter of voting. Sending a comment in, it should help, I would think, in at least if there is to be a argument at some point, a legal argument saying, oh, this is going to impact a lot of people. Well, it would be really great to have a lot of comments at the FCC. Having been submitted, because that's going to show that it's going to have a major impact. I know there's people out there saying, don't submit comments that, unless they're, you're going to write a really good comment and it's going to be really thoughtful. And I would generally agree. You should try and do that. Try and write a good comment if you can. Read what's on the website, on the savewifi.org website. Read some comments on the FCC. There is information on the FCC website as well on how to write a good comment. I would encourage people to read that as well. And then try and write the best comment you can. But regardless, don't feel like it's, you can't write a good comment. You can write a good comment. You may not, it doesn't necessarily have to be long. Write the best comment you can. Because it's not a vote, but it will show that there are a lot of users out there at a minimum. That are going to be impacted, and there are rules that the FCC themselves have kind of written off, which forced them to do what's called an impact study. And if for some reason the FCC says, oh, well, we're just going to continue to ignore you, and there's a lawsuit or, something similar that comes about as a result of all this, having being able to go, or even just being able to go back to the FCC and say, hey, wait a minute, you said this wasn't going to have any impact. Well, your own website, your own comment period, shows evidence that this is going to have a major impact. And this is the kind of evidence, might be needed, especially if they don't listen and they don't respect, users. If you do have any kind of business that sells computers, if you sell or any kind of device, phones, and you install some third party firmware, send your comments in. It's important. Because those are probably actually some of the best comments, that even more so than just end user comments. Because you'll probably have better information. Small businesses, it's going to negatively impact small businesses. Any kind of small business that, does any kind of customization, it's going to impact you. Www.savewifi.org. Send your comments in.
Absolutely, people. This week, do not go to podnos.com/Amazon. Do not go to iTunes and do a review. In fact, when I'm done saying what I'm saying, stop listening to podcast and go file comments. And if you think of a comment in a week that's even better, more poignant, make another comment. Make sure you tell as many people as possible. Make sure you tell the hams that you know. Make sure you tell the makers that you know. Make sure you tell the hackers that you know. Make sure you tell the small offices, the computer techs consulting small office, home office kind of thing. Make sure they know. Make sure as many people as you can possibly think of know, because if we let, like Chris said, if we let them do whatever they want to do, there's no way this is going to end good, period. Chris, I cannot thank you enough for picking up the flag. And I will say this right now. If you've ever been to a conference where Chris, and I can never remember the other guy from Think Penguins, that's always there.
Bob.
Okay. Chris and Bob are two of the smarter guys I know, okay? Ruben from Triskel. I've had a chance to chat with all three of these guys. Among the smartest people I've ever sat down and talked to. Don't take my word on it, okay? And don't think you're going to be able to sit down and read this and understand it. Just stop and think. These people, A, create operating systems, and B, rewrite some BIOS and firmware on things. They create router software. These guys are obviously smarter than the average fella, okay? Take their word for it, because I guarantee you right now, they are not steering you wrong, period. Chris, I can't thank you enough for coming out to this special episode, and I just want to encourage you and thank you. Keep fighting the good fight, sir.
Thank you for having me on the show, and get the word out. www.savewifi.org.
Awesome. Thank you, guys, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.